Hello and welcome to the Reloading Rag Chew episode. I am finally back on. Yeah, it's been a few months. Some stuff's going on. Well, actually at this point it's happened. Personal stuff. To give you a hint, involves one of those things where two people take all of their crap and somehow each end up with about less than half of it. So, I've moved. So all that progress we talked about on getting the gun room set up, yeah, that's gone. Moved all of my stuff. Right now I'm set up temporarily for a little while. My reloading bench is finally set back up. It has become a very old 4x2 card table, picnic table kind of thing. It's at least got a wood top on it. Moves like crazy every time the press goes up and down. But I'm back where I can reload. On a note of that, I know I've talked about my little slide-in, slide-out system. I don't have room to set my old table back up. It's just not going to happen for a while. I've got to wait for a house to sell. Then I've got to buy a house. Then I've got to move in all the stuff that I actually require to live and set it up, like a bed and stuff like that. But then after that, I can finally get set back up. In the meantime, I have designed a temporary reloading bench. And by temporary, it actually wouldn't be temporary. It's just a smaller one. Would be good for people who are working out of a corner of a room or in an apartment. So I'm going to work on that. I've already got the design together. I may throw a picture of it up. It's in SketchUp right now on the Facebook page. Just see what anybody's comments are. If I do get around to building it, which I think is pretty likely right now, I'll take some video of putting it to me assembling it, some of the techniques that I use, some of the parts that are a little harder to convey with just a couple pictures, and post that up. And that may be the first or one of the early videos for this podcast. So other than that, I'm finally getting everything back together. I have not been shooting very much. I'm finally getting back to shooting. I have not been loading much as a result of not shooting much and not having anywhere to go or to actually reload. Finally getting that back together. I shot the first match that I'd been to in a while a couple weeks ago. Didn't actually have to load anything for that, but still it was nice to get back out there. I also finally got a couple 308 loads down. I think I've got one that's going to be my go-to for the time being until I get better as a shooter and can start having limitations from it. There's also a couple things I wanted to change on the rifle. Mostly the butt stocks didn't agree with me. Too wide, and my shoulder, I guess, is not a big burly man shoulder. Finally getting back out there, I actually went out earlier today and shot my 1911, which I've not laid hands on in quite a while. Tried to sight in my 625 revolver, and as it turns out, I needed more than two moon clips worth of ammo to do that, and just didn't bother bringing any. I think I've got it around. I just didn't bother actually bringing it. But that's what's going on with me. It's been a not, well, we'll call it exciting, but not necessarily pleasant past few months. A lot of changes. Not all of them good. Not all of them bad. So hopefully we're going to get stabilized back out here. As soon as my old house sells, then I can find a place and move in and get more permanently set up. And I'll probably do some stuff about kind of how I get that set up over time. Take some videos, take some pictures, just for those of you who are starting out or trying to figure out possibly some new ideas on how to lay out your reloading room. A lot of news has happened in the time since I've been gone. One of the early things that happened after I kind of took a break and it was on my list for things to put on the next podcast is Russia has apparently just legalized where its citizens can reload rifle rounds. Previously, which I didn't really know this because I've never looked into it before, they could only reload shotgun shells. Now they can reload rifle rounds. One of the interesting things that I noticed in the article about that was if you acquire a rifle, and this was on the firearms blog, so, and this might have been some translation in there. When you buy a rifle there, you apparently have to take a class on safety. based on the article, it sounds like anyone who takes that class on safety, it's going to include a portion on reloading safety. The other thing that they mentioned, that's something that, getting into a topic further on, they apparently really tightly control primers and powder sales. So if you don't own a gun, which presumably they've got a license or a registry or something like that, you can't buy powder and primers. In addition, they're going to be keeping records of sales. And I bet that part of this is going to be that they're going to try and prevent people from amassing too much powder. And that's something that comes up in discussions. I see a lot on Facebook and forums and stuff is there a limit to how much powder, primers, etc. you can store? And as far as I know, the answer is it's entirely dependent on your local jurisdiction. And most of the limits are going to be around with your fire department and how much propellant or combustibles they're going to let you store in your in a household. So I don't think that there's a federal limit. I think that there is a point where if you're buying semi-truck loads, you may get a call from the ATF. But I would be willing to bet the ATF would care more about whether or not you are doing ammo manufacturing and sales without having the proper license and without getting them their proper taxes. So I don't think that they're going to care as much about, unless, you know, you're a known right-wing, left-wing, up-wing, down-wing, whatever nutcase who's had a violent history. In that case, they might want to ask some other questions too. So Russia is now letting its citizens reload rifles. That's really cool. It's great for them. The big problem I see is so much of the calibers that come out of Russia are Berdan primed and aren't, the cases aren't really great for reloading. That's been changing, and I'm sure that they're going to import stuff in. One thing I can see that this might affect is a lot of us have started using the cheaper primers, the Wolf, Tula, forget some of the other brands, but there's a lot of cheaper primer brands out of there, a lot of them out of Russian and former Soviet bloc countries. Those may start to decrease in availability if it takes off quickly in that country, because they're obviously going to be trying to sell to their own people first. It's a lot easier. Next bit of news. Richard Lee, the founder of Lee Reloading, passed away in September. He lived to a fairly old age, so I don't think it's truly a tragic thing, but it's always sad to see someone in the community pass away, especially, and I know this can get into topics we've talked about before on red versus blue versus green Kool-Aid. Regardless of what you think of Lee products, you know, they're cheap, they're junk, whatever. For one, no reloading system is perfect. No reloading system does everything. If you don't kind of have a healthy mix of things, you're probably missing out. But the other thing is, Richard Lee was an inventor. He created the Lee Loader, which, while you don't see those in use much anymore, it was truly revolutionary at its time, and it sold like hotcakes as a result. The other thing is, he came up with a lot of innovations in the reloading space, and I think if you look through the technologies that are out there, you'll find some of the stuff that he developed are in use by all of the other manufacturers, including Dillon, including RCBS. So, truly a good icon in our community. It's sad to see him go. I'm glad to see that his family is continuing to run the business as he intended it to be. So, next bit of news. The Army, this one's been all over recently. The Army is claiming that it's going to be moving from 5.56 up to a 6.8 based cartridge. I can't find anywhere that actually says what 6.8 cartridge it's going to be. I don't think it's going to be the 6.8 SPC, because I think that that would be out there already. I think that they're trying to come up with their own, and one of the comments that I saw was they are looking for something that performs better past 300 yards. So, and 6.8 SPC is a good cartridge, but its effective military usefulness is about the same as the 5.56 out to about 300. So I have a feeling it's going to be something different. the biggest things that I can see that this will mean is we may be flooded with surplus 5.56 ammunition and components whenever this happens. Maybe, maybe not. Sometimes those things take years to work out of the system. But on the surplus side, this may mean a surplus availability of 6.8 bullets in the future after this happens. Ammo manufacturers are going to make these rounds. They may not pass spec. The military may not buy them. Whatever, they get demailed. And if you look at what's available out there, 5.56, 7.62 by, you know, 7.62, 308, tons of available surplus bullets. And a lot of those come from the military. In the 6.8 category, for those of us who load 6.8 based cartridges, there are not a ton of surplus bullets, and they're definitely not universally available. For example, when the gold dots come around, which now they're finally making them and manufacturing them just for sale as components, when those used to come around, they'd get posted up on a website and they'd be sold out within minutes. So hopefully this might mean a change where we can see some 6.8 SPC, some 277 lighter weight, you know, we'll just say 120 grains and under bullets that are also being surplus from this military ammunition. So pretty interesting stuff. I can definitely see some advantages to moving to a bigger cartridge. I'm not an expert. There's tons of videos out there. Ian on Forgotten Weapons has talked about this numerous times. The 5.56 is really a pretty small cartridge compared to historical military cartridges of a 308. And while it has huge advantages in the amount of ammo that you can carry, there are some disadvantages to it as far as its actual capabilities in the field against armored or soft targets. So I think moving up to a larger, heavier bullet will probably be a good idea, especially with what modern combat is looking like. Finally, there is an election coming up. Not going to get into the politics of it. Vote who you want to vote in. But depending on the outcome of the elections, guns may be a hot topic in Congress afterwards. There are certain people out there who want guns gone. If we don't have guns, there's not a whole lot of point for us to reload. Or worst case, we might get someone in there that goes after reloading because they think that we're a bunch of crazed nutcases that, you know, care so much that we make our own bullets to custom kill people or whatever BS they happen to spin. So an election's coming up. It's going to be a real interesting one to tell, because if it goes one way, guns could be given a free pass for quite a while into the future. If it goes the other way, things could get really weird really quickly. Whether you decide to stock up or not, I'm going to leave that up to you, but it's something to consider. At least, I'm sure a lot of us remember the powder scares that happened during the Obama administration and how hard it was just to get basic run-of-the-mill powders, and how hard that was and how much of a pain it was. I probably will be picking up at least a couple extra pounds of all my common powders, just because I know I'll use them. So it's really just a cost offset of I buy it now versus I buy it later. But that way, if something does happen, if there's some kind of panic, I've got a bigger buffer to try and find this stuff before it starts getting into crunch time. The Reloading Rag Chew is a proud member of the Self-Defense Radio Network, a group of podcasters all about different forms of the gun industry, different opinions, different places. I'd like to welcome our newest podcast, Unload and Show Clear by Lloyd Bailey. It is an IPDA-focused podcast interviewing a number of the upper class of the shooters and personalities in IPDA. Like I've said on my podcast numerous times, I think that competition is a key factor in not just your shooting ability, but perfecting your reloading. IPDA is a great example of that. Personally, I'm not an IPDA shooter. All their acronyms confuse me. ESP and IPC and ESP and ISP and QS. I can't keep track of it to figure out what to shoot, so I don't, but it's important that you get out there and do some kind of competition. And IPDA is a great place to start because it's using something you already have. You've probably already got a carry gun. You've probably already got a holster for it. That's all you really need. So, great podcast. Listen in. And also, go to our website, sdrn.us, and check out all of the podcasts that we've got. I'm sure that there's something else out there that can help you out and give you some more information.
Hi, everyone. This is Paul Lathrop from the Polite Society Podcast. I'm inviting you to come check out our network, the Self-Defense Radio Network. Self-Defense Radio Network is a group of pro-gun and pro-freedom podcasters that cover the gun community from every perspective. No matter your interest in the gun world, we have a show to cover it. Please stop by and check us out at selfdefenseradio.net. Again, that's selfdefenseradio.net.
So what do I want to talk about today? I want to run through case prep and cleaning processes. I know we've talked a lot about case prep before. I've got some opinions on it here and there. But something that I've seen come up a couple times recently and over time is, what order do you actually do things in? Do you clean first? Do you size first? Do you deprime? Do you not deprime? There's lots of ways to do it, and I can't really say that any of them are wrong or any of them are right. Certain of them are probably more particular and will give you the best results, but typically that's at an offset of it takes a lot more time. That's why I say none of them are perfect, none of them are imperfect. As a result, I actually do a couple different ones, which we'll talk about at the end, for different kinds depending on what I'm doing. So, what are the big parts of it? Well, one, primer pocket cleaning. If you deprime first before you clean, then obviously you're going to get the primer pocket cleaner. You'll have a better chance of that, and you'll get better results if you wet tumble versus dry tumble, at least in my opinion. The wet tumbling, that's one of the real advantages of it. But the flip of it is, RCBS and a couple of others sell basically a little wire brush that goes in the cylinder or in the primer pocket and cleans it out just as well. The other question that I've got sometimes is, do clean primer pockets really matter? In terms of general shooting, I don't think I've ever really noticed. The only time where I have, I'm going to call it, noticed a difference, but it's kind of a weird anecdotal thing, on my revolver rounds where primer seating perfection is required because you get a misfire if it's wrong at all, ever since I started making sure that all my primer pockets were clean, I have had very few issues. However, that's also the time that I started hand priming every round and hand QCing every round before I load it. So I can't say for certain that it's the clean primer pockets, but if you are in a situation like that, to me it's worth the extra step because one misfire can screw up a whole stage. Depriming before I load takes me a couple extra minutes, not a big deal. Another advantage of this, if you do deprime before you clean, is tons of horror stories out there on bent priming pins or broken priming pins. If you go with a dedicated deprimer and you do that first, typically the depriming pin is much stronger. And there's a few brands out there. Mighty Armory is frequently talked about, that have just bulletproof decappers where it'll punch straight through the case if something goes wrong instead of breaking the pin or bending the pin. So you definitely have that advantage. The other thing that can come up with this clean first idea, whether you decap or not, is it okay to put a dirty case through a resizing die? This comes up a lot. And I think the answer is, it depends on what you mean by dirty. I have absolutely no problem putting a sooty case where I shot it, it landed especially with rifle cases, this happened. It went straight into my little brass catcher net thing. I dumped it in a bag. I took it home. I have zero problem putting brass that is sooty like that through my die. In fact, soot is a bit of a lubricant in itself. I'm still going to lube the case, but I am not worried about damaging the die with that. If you look in some other industries, actually taking a candle and sooting up something can be a way to give it just that little bit of lubrication that it needs. So now, if it's pistol brass and you're out there shooting on a gravel field like I am and a lot of other people are, that's where you might not want to put them through your thing, through your resizing die, because they may score the die up. You know, obviously it's one of those you got to kind of take a look at it, take a judgment call. And if you're like me in a brass vacuum and pick anything up, including stuff that wasn't yours and may have been half buried in the dirt that you dig out with a stick because it looked like something interesting, but it was actually a 9mm and not worth the time, then you definitely need to do some kind of cleaning before you put them through your dies. Dies aren't expensive, but they're also not cheap, and you'd hate to load a bunch and then discover that your die was damaged, so your stuff's not really good to go. So that's kind of the arguments on cleaning before. Now, the next one, and this is more of a rifle-centric topic, should you keep clean off case lube? Or does leaving lubed rounds not cause any issues? Well, I have shot them both ways. I can't say any time where I've ever had case lube cause a problem with the function of the gun. I will say that I do leave it on my 5.7, so I can't say that that would be a problem. I have changed, though. I used to use spray lube. In fact, I've still got it somewhere, and it still works okay. If I use a spray lube, I tend to clean the cases afterwards because I don't... When you spray lube, you're going to get some inside the case. It just happens. And I don't want whatever's in that spray lube, which is usually lanolin, to cause an effect with the powder over time. It may be perfectly safe, but I'm not a chemist. I'm not going to take that risk. A lot of times now, I use just one of the tins of lube. I forget which one it is. It's one of the good ones. Where you just smear some on your fingers, you put it on the case. I am less inclined to clean the cases afterwards or to feel like it's necessary with that because you put so little on there and it's completely on the outside of the case. Another part of this that can come in for me, particularly on rifles, is if I trim the cases, I really like, or I ream the primer pockets, I really like to run them through the tumbler after that because I like to get all those little brass bits out. I'm sure if they mix in the powder, it's not going to cause that big of an issue, but that's just kind of an OCD thing for me. I don't want to know what might happen. So, and oftentimes that kind of works out. So what's my process? Well, for pistol, I really have two processes. One, if it's plinking ammo, so it's 9mm, 45, 38, whatever, just plinking ammo for general range use. I throw it through the tumbler, wet tumbler, dry tumbler. Kind of depends on what the brass looks like. Depends on how much time I have. Obviously, the dry tumbler takes longer, but the wet tumbler, it's more work during each section, and it's a little bit more time critical. But I clean the brass, and then typically I just run it through the progressive press, load it, primer pocket doesn't get cleaned, whatever. If it ends up really dirty, which is usually because I load some random lead rounds with crappy lube on them and the lube gets all over the die and then all over the cases, I'll throw them through the tumbler after they're loaded. Yeah, I'm going to blow myself up, I know. We'll cover that on a later episode. I'm still working on that experiment. I'll throw them through the tumbler just to get that lube off because that will jam stuff up. The lube that's on bullets is thick, heavy, greasy stuff. So, plinking ammo, not a big deal. Clean it, load it, done. For my less common stuff and my revolver loads, I decap it, I wet tumble it, I load it. That simple. Main reason there is a lot of times on those, I'm doing a little bit more inspection of the brass if it's something like 460 Roland, because there's a lot more potential issue there if there's bad brass in there. And with the revolver, I really want to eliminate every possible primer problem, because those plagued me for so long, and it's a match killer when you get a jam like that. So that's pistol. I try and keep it simple. Most of my pistol is high volume, so I don't want to go through too much of a rigmarole to make this work. So what about rifle? And rifle is more of a process for me, but I also shoot typically less rifle. It's going to vary a little bit. Somewhat, it's a very different process when I am reforming cases for a wildcat versus when I am just loading. Also, it's a little different now that I've got a bolt action and I'm pretending that I can shoot precision rifle. I'm a little bit more careful with that brass than I am with my general plinking brass that I load and throw in a bin and go, you know, knock off 20 rounds. Pretty much with all rifle, I first decap it. A lot of my rifle sizing dies have the decapping pin removed for various reasons, so it's easiest if I just decap it all first. Also, on pistol, it's really easy to tell if you got Berdan Prime stuff, and it's pretty rare. With rifle, it's a lot more likely to run into those kind of problems, and unless you're going to sit there with a flashlight and shine it down the case mouth of everyone, it's hard to see. So I'm going to decap it. I'm going to wet tumble it. It gets all the garbage out of there. And the water that comes out of a wet tumble with rifle brass is generally just disgusting. Then I resize it. And I remembered I use Imperial case lube typically. Sometimes I'll use the spray lube, especially if I'm doing like a whole ton of stuff. Put it in a baggie. Spritz some spritz in there, shake it up, some more, shake it up. Resize it, trim it, chamfer it. Generally, I try not to trim every time. I hate trimming. It's one of the reasons why I did avoid rifle reloading for so long. I hate trimming. Such a boring process. But either way, I chamfer it every time. I usually use my mechanical machine. And then if I've got a load of brass that I've prepared, it's all my stuff, I'll test every 5 or 10 cases, and if all of them measure within spec, I won't worry about trimming. So I do that, and then I dry tumble it. So at this point, I'm getting the case lube off, and I'm getting all of the shavings from the trim and champ for all those little brass bits out of there. Also, it just gives you real nice clean brass. And for this, I usually only dry tumble this stuff for 30 minutes to an hour. I don't have to go real long. If you put a little mineral spirits in it, it cuts through that case lube a little quicker. So, and then I load it. I don't typically tumble loaded rifle rounds unless I changed up my process and didn't do that second dry tumble, in which case sometimes then I do. But that's how I do it. Is it the right way? Maybe. I mean, could you tumble it, then decap it, then tumble it, then resize it, then tumble it, then trim it, then tumble it, then load it, then tumble it? Sure. It's a lot of tumbling. I hope you've got more than one tumbler. Could you tumble it first and go through the entire loading process and it work? Probably, especially if you're using a case lube that you can make sure you don't get it inside. I don't see a problem with that. Can you wipe the cases down with a rag and load them? Certainly. Tumbling and cleaning is something that people really put more emphasis on than is necessary. It used to be something that very few people did because the equipment was so expensive. They didn't live in the day where you can buy a tumbler off Amazon for $20 or from Harbor Freight or wherever. So I don't think that there's a right answer. I don't think that there's a wrong answer. My logic is that I want to protect my dies. I would prefer to have rounds that are not lubed at the end, somewhat just because I hate loading them I hate the way that your hands feel after you handle that stuff too much, especially when you're loading and then you're going to go shoot your gun. So you're getting that lube all over the outside of your gun and the trigger and everything. I'm not a big fan of that. But I'm also trying to not go overboard with this, and I'm trying to not waste too much time. So let me know your opinion. Let me know what your process is, if you've got a better way to do it. If you're a chemist and can tell me, hey, the case lubes that are out there won't affect powder, let me know. I'd love to get that out to everybody. Like I said, I don't know for certain. Just my paranoia has always said when I use spray lubes and I know that it gets inside the case, I like to clean them out before I shoot them or before I put powder in them. Well, I'm glad to be back. I'm hoping to make this a regular thing again. I've seen quite a bit of interest. I've had several people message me saying, hey, what's going on? I thank all of you that took the time to reach out and check in. It's nice to know that people out there are listening and are paying attention. And otherwise, happy reloading. Stay safe.